Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 4, text 7. Well-known verse. Yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata abhyutthanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself, spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Purport. The word Srijami is significant herein. Srijami cannot be used in the sense of creation, because according to the previous verse, there is no creation of the Lord's form or body, since all of the forms are eternally existent. Therefore, Srijami means that the Lord manifests himself as he is. Although the Lord appears on schedule, namely, at the end of the Dwarapa Yuga of the 28th millennium of the 7th Manu in one day of Brahma, he has no obligation to adhere to such rules and regulations because he is completely free to act in many ways at his will. He therefore appears by his own will whenever there is a predominance of irreligiosity and a disappearance of true religion. Principles of religion are laid down in the Vedas, and any discrepancy in the matter of properly executing the codes of the Vedas makes one irreligious. In the Bhagavatam it is stated that such principles are the laws of the Lord. Who knows the Sanskrit for that? Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavan pranitam. Only the Lord can manufacture a system of religion. The Vedas are also accepted as originally spoken by the Lord himself to Brahma from within his heart. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye. Therefore, the principles of dharma or religion are the direct orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. These principles are clearly indicated throughout the Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of the Vedas is to establish such principles under the order of the Supreme Lord, and the Lord directly orders at the end of the Gita that the highest principle of religion is to surrender unto him only and nothing more. Anyone? Sarvadhaman Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Raja. The Vedic principles push one toward complete surrender unto him. And whenever such principles are disturbed by the demoniac, the Lord appears. From the Bhagavatam, we understand that Lord Buddha is the incarnation of Krishna, who appeared when materialism was rampant and materialists were using the pretext of the authority of the Vedas. Well, that's in the second canto. It says, there's speaking a verse about Lord Buddha here. Asura Vimohanam, something like this, he states. Otherwise, in the first canto, it's talking about Buddha. What is that verse? Andana Sutta Kikateshu. Okay. Although there are certain restrictive rules and regulations regarding animal sacrifice for particular purposes in the Vedas, people of demoniac tendency still took to animal sacrifice without reference to the Vedic principles. Lord Buddha appeared in order to stop this nonsense and to establish the Vedic principles of non-violence. Therefore, each and every avatar or incarnation of the Lord has a particular mission, and they are all described in the revealed scriptures. No one should be accepted as an avatar unless he is referred to by scriptures. It is not a fact that the Lord appears only on Indian soil. He can manifest himself anywhere and everywhere, and whenever he desires to appear. In each and every incarnation, he speaks as much about religion as can be understood by the particular people under their particular circumstances. But the mission is the same, to lead people to God consciousness and obedience to the principles of religion. Sometimes he descends personally, and sometimes he sends his bona fide representative in the form of his son or servant or himself in some disguised form. The principles of the Bhagavad Gita were spoken to Arjuna, and for that matter to other highly elevated persons, because he was highly advanced compared to ordinary persons in other parts of the world. 2 + 2 = 4 is a mathematical principle that is true in the beginner's arithmetic class and in the advanced class as well. Still, there are higher and lower mathematics. In all incarnations of the Lord, therefore, the same principles are taught, but they appear to be higher and lower in varied circumstances. The higher principles of religion begin with the acceptance of the four orders and the four statuses of social life, as will be explained later. The whole purpose of the mission of incarnations is to arouse Krishna consciousness everywhere. Such consciousness is manifest and non-manifest only under different circumstances. Yesterday I spoke about inclusivism and exclusivism. The conclusion is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satyarananda Vigraha. Ha! Next line. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satyarananda Vigraha. Anadir Adir Govinda. Sarva. Karna Karnam. Very good. Krishna is the Supreme Controller. His form is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. He has no beginning. He is the origin of everything. He is Govinda, the giver of pleasure to the cows, the senses, the earth. And he is the cause of all causes. So that's Krishna. And who are we? Jivesu Rupoi Krishna Nityadas. We're all constitutionally eternal servants of Krishna. Therefore, sarva dhamman parityaja mamekam sharanam braja. We should give up all conceptions of being separate from Krishna, even if they are apparently religious, and simply surrender to Krishna. So that is the actual message of the Vedas. The actual Vedic message, but as Srila Prabhupada indicates in this purport, which we just read today, not everyone's ready for that, so the Lord appears either personally or as through his representative or son or servant and speaks to people about religious principles to the extent that they can understand them. It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada writes here that Lord Buddha appeared and he decried the Vedas, but he did so to establish the Vedic principle of non-violence, Srila Prabhupada writes. So, what's more important, the Vedic principle or the Vedas itself? Well, ultimately the Vedas have to be followed, therefore Buddha is rejected. Buddhism is rejected. And Buddha is accepted as Vishnu avatar, but his teachings are rejected. So, because the Vedas were being misused, he proposed to reject the Vedas, and in doing so he established the Vedic principles. He established certain of the orthopraxy while rejecting the orthodoxy. Remember those words from yesterday? Orthopraxy means the proper, the standard behavior, and orthodoxy means the standard understanding or philosophy. And later Shankara came and he kept the same orthopraxy and kept the Buddhist orthodoxy, which is heterodoxy, which means it's against the orthodoxy. The Buddhist orthodoxy is against the Vedic orthodoxy, and inasmuch as Therefore, it's heterodox, opposite of orthodox, because it doesn't accept the Vedas. So Shankara accepted Buddha's heterodox understanding, his orthopraxis, while establishing the major point of the orthodoxy of the, that we have to, of the Vedic culture, that we have to accept the Vedas. And later on, the Vaishnava Acharyas came and said, okay, Shankara accepts the Vedas, okay, good. He accepts the Vedic culture, good. But his philosophy is bogus. So they came to put everything right. Everything was going off and it was bringing it back gradually, step by step, over several generations. So, continuing on that theme, about attacks on Vedic culture. Hinduism, which is the modern term for what Vedic culture has come to be. It's not exactly Vedic culture, pristine Vedic culture. But it's under attack. And therefore groups like the Vishva Hindu Parishad have been formed. The Sangha Parivar. What's that? There's Vishva Hindu Parishad and RSS, Rashtriya Swayamsevak Samiti, and ABVP, Akhil Bharat Vidyarthi Parishad, Bajrang Dal, Bharatiya Janata Party. Sometimes they pretend to be part of it and sometimes they pretend not. Shiv Sena is not part of that. It's a different organization. They're in the same mood, but it's more pro Marathi and it's less diplomatic. They're very heavy. So there are various groups under the umbrella of the Sangha Parivar. And there are other groups also which want to preserve Hinduism. One voluminous book was compiled recently. I've spoken about it several times. I'd read almost all of it. That Breaking India, it documents in a very convincing manner how Hinduism is under attack, and particularly in India and outside also, from an orchestrated, conscious policy of attacking Hinduism for various reasons, by Christians, Muslims, Maoists, and Western vested interests. The thesis of this book is quite credible, and anyone interested in Vedic culture or Hinduism and preserving it should take note of the message of that book. But actually, even in its best times, Vedic culture was always under attack, because this world is not meant for being good in. Vedic culture is meant for guiding us so that we become purified, so that we can go back to Godhead. But the jivas in this world are here because they don't want to be back to Godhead. They want to be here. And the best among the jivas, Krishna gives the access to the Vedic culture. But the nature of the conditioned soul, everything in this world tends to degenerate, and especially in Kali Yuga, things tend to degenerate very quickly. That verse is there, Tatas Chanu Dinam Dharma Satyam Socham Shamadaya Kalena Balina Rajan Nang Shanti Ayo Balang Smritihi. In Kali Yuga, with the passing of every day, Dharma, Satyam, Socham, Kshama, Daya, Ayu, in this sense meaning lifespan, balam, bodily strength, and smriti, smriti shakti. You can all understand these words. I'll just translate them for the benefit of those who may not. Dharma is untranslatable, often translated as religion. Satyam, truth or truthfulness in this context, because truth cannot ever decline, but truthfulness, the propensity to be truthful. Shocham, the propensity to be clean. Kshama, tolerance. Daya, compassion. By the mighty influence of time, day by day in Kali Yuga, these will decline. And also lifespan, average lifespan, bodily strength and mental strength, memory and other features of mental strength. But actually it's always declining in every yoga, but just that it's so fast in Kali Yuga. It's in Dwarpa Yuga, it's declining more slowly. The beginning of Dwarpa Yuga was better than the end of it. It's not that just you go from one yoga to the next and there's some... It's a massive change. There will be some significant change, but change is always going, it's always declining. So the Vedic culture is always under attack because there are always people within the Vedic culture and those who are outside it also who want to wriggle out and get out from this, all these restrictions. Vedic culture, there are many rules to follow for everyone. But the conditioned soul, his nature, he wants to be free to enjoy. He wants to be in the illusion of being free to enjoy. The Vedic rules, they guide us toward our real state of being controlled. We are always controlled, either in the spiritual existence or material existence. We're constitutionally dependent. We're not independent. But in the material world, we want to live out our fantasy of being independent. And in Vedic culture, there's very much lacking. In the modern world, there's so much talk about freedom, freedom, freedom. But in Vedic culture, there's this idea of freedom. It's not promoted. Ultimate freedom means mukti, deliverance from this material world. But that doesn't mean that one becomes ultimately free. That's the Mayavadi. Full freedom means to become God. That's all. But that we cannot. Freedom means you can do whatever you like, whenever you like, however you like, to whoever you like, in all circumstances, all places, all times. That right belongs to Krishna only, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Krishna, when things get very bad, as described in this verse, dharmasya glani, and the decline of religion and adharma becomes prominent, and Krishna comes and he establishes Vedic culture. And immediately others try to disestablish, either gradually or subtly or by direct attacks. There have always been atheists, there have always been misinterpreters of the Vedic culture, as well as within the Vedic culture, there have always been atheists, people who, that can be understood in different ways. That term Pashanda or Pakandi is there. It may not exactly mean the same as atheist. As in the Western world, there's this, in English language, there's the term atheist, which means you don't believe in God. But the Vedic term Pashanda, we often see in the writings of the Acharyas, Pashanda Matam, Madhvacharya, he uses this term, and others also. So it may be within the Vedic culture, maybe outside the Vedic culture, we find, for instance, Draupadi once accused Yudhishthira that you see, if all your dharma, and what's the use of all your dharma? We ended up in the forest. When you say, you should all go and kill Duryodhana, go and attack them all and kill them. What are you following? In the name of dharma, you're following your promise. Why don't you just go and kill them all? What's the use of your dharma, living here like a beggar? So Yudhishthira said, yes, you've spoken very nicely, but actually it's atheism. Because we follow dharma not for the sake of living comfortably, but we follow dharma for the sake of dharma. That's all. Dharma is to be followed not for any personal gain, just the fact that dharma should be followed. Ultimately, dharma is to be followed to please Krishna. But this is just an example of how that is considered pashandamatam. So what's the use of all this dharma? You see, we're following dharma, but then we're not getting what we wanted. But that's not one who thinks like that, that's equivalent to those karma mimamsa, who say that, well, you follow all the Vedic injunctions and you, God, whatever it is, gives you what you want, and then you live happily. So there's always, even among enlightened people, there can be misunderstandings. In Satya Yuga, most people were enlightened. And there wasn't the need for Varnashram to be rigidly imposed. Everyone was of the same jati, Hamsa jati. So, anarchy can work in a society where everyone's enlightened. Then you don't need laws. You don't need written laws. You don't need kshatriyas to curb the miscreants. If everyone's enlightened, then there's no need of any government. There's no need of any economic development. People can live very simply and pursue self-realization. That's possible in Satya Yuga. But even in Satya Yuga, the great demons Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu came. They upset the established order of dharma. So Varahadev came, Nrsimhadev came, and killed them. In Treta Yuga, then Varnashram came in full force. The people were following it nicely, mostly. But there were demons also. It wasn't that just that Ravana was the only demon. There were other demons also. That's Vishvamitra called the young Ram and Lakshman to kill Tartaka, female demon, and then there was Maricha. Even before Ravana was known of in what's now North India, there were demons also. They're always Rakshasas. Some of them appear in Rakshasa form, many of them are humans also. In astrology, there are three, humans are classified into three categories, Deva, Manusha, and Rakshasa, by their psychological makeup. Some are godly, some are demoniac, and some are in between. So in Treta Yuga, there were more demons. Demons means against Vedic culture. That at the end of the 16th chapter, after describing the characteristics of the demons, Krishna says, Yashastra vidimutsucha vartate kamakarataha nasasidim avapnoti nasukam naparamgata. He speaks of those who don't follow Shastra. They're demons. They don't follow Shastra. Or, prior to that, he spoke of those who perform sacrifices in name only. They make a show of following the Vedic culture. So in many ways, Duryodhana followed the Vedic culture. Jarasandha followed the Vedic culture. So they were within the Vedic culture, but they were demons. They were against the principle of Vishnu Bhakti, even if superficially Jarasandha performed Vishnu Bhakti. Hiranyakashipu, he was directly against Vedic culture. He wanted to stop the sacrifices. He saw that the sacrifices are performed, that's by the brahmanas. So in that way, everyone, they cooperate to offer everything to Vishnu. So if we stop all the sacrifice, the demigods will be frustrated and Vishnu will be frustrated. And then he wanted to set up a new universal order with himself dispensing all the boons, doing all the jobs of all the demigods. He was a real demon. Asuravarya. Asuravarya, the most eminent among all the demons. Kamsa also, in Dwarpa Yuga, he also thought that, well, if we stop all the sacrifices, then the Vedic culture will be cut at its root. Vishnu won't get his offerings, and the demigods won't get their offerings, and demigods will become weak, and then me and my friends, we can rule very happily. So they're directly enemies of Vedic culture. Persons like Duryodhana, they superficially practice Vedic culture, but their intention was not, it was completely different to that of Yudhishthira, who followed dharma for the sake of following dharma. But their idea was that we'll follow dharma as much as we can utilize it and exploit everyone in the name of dharma. Srila Prabhupada, in this purport, he refers to Buddha, as I yesterday spoke, that Buddha, he operated within and almost completely adopted the Vedic culture in many ways. Yet it was a great attack on the Vedic culture because it denied the Vedas. So what could be more of an attack than to deny the Vedas? This concept of Nirvana, it wasn't something new that he was preaching. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that there are many people who were talking about this. It was nothing, even at that time there were people who were promoting this, but somehow, because he's Vishnu avatar, he became very popular. Just like at the time of Jesus, Jesus wasn't the only one who was a Jewish revivalist, trying to bring spirituality back to Judaism. There were others also. There were all kinds of spiritual subgroups going on. But Jesus became very popular somehow or other after his death. Another reason that Buddhism was an attack on the Vedic culture, because I also said yesterday that they didn't recognize Varnashram. Everyone's all equal and it doesn't matter what caste you are. There's no need to keep this caste system. Shakya Singh himself, who later became famous as Buddha, he was a Kshatriya. He should have performed the Kshatriya duty, as Krishna told Arjuna. He could have achieved self-realization, as Krishna gave the example of Janak in Bhagavad Gita. He attained self-realization by acting within the Varnashram system. Krishna was very much against Arjuna. He wasn't against Arjuna, but he was against Arjuna proposing to leave the battle. And Arjuna said, Nakangshe Vijayam Krishna. I don't want victory. For a For a kshatriya to say that, it's like becoming a Buddhist. It's giving up your duty. Kshatriya, he's there in the battle, he has to fight and try and attain victory. If he attains victory, then he goes to the heavenly planets. Sorry, if he attains victory, it's Hatova prapsyase swargam. What's the next line? Hatova prapsyase swargam. Jidvava bhokshase mahim. If he's victorious, he enjoys the earth. If he's killed, then he goes to heaven. So for a kshatriya to say, I don't want victory, then he's neglecting his duty. It's his duty to fight and to fight to the best of his ability to try to attain victory. But he wants to go off and become all of a sudden in the battlefield. This is why Krishna also says that. Klaibyang masmagama parta. What is that? Now, and then what's the next verse? In this situation, you can't say that. You've come here to fight, you're supposed to fight. Now later on, the Pandavas, when they'd done their duty throughout their life as Kshatriyas, they'd given the kingdom to Parikshit, then they retired. But if you come in the battlefield, then all of a sudden you say, well, actually, I'm more interested in self-realization. That is anarya jushtam. It's not fitting it's not proper for a person who's actually elevated to you. You want to speak as if you're elevated. This is not elevated. You should do your duty like that. So that was another way in which Buddhism attacked the Vedic culture. He said, you don't need to follow all these duties, you just follow what I say, Buddha says, and then you can become self-realized. But there's a problem with that, in which there are many problems with that. One of the problems is that then there's no fixed social system. And the social system doesn't lead, by performing one's duties, it doesn't lead one to self-realization. Because not everyone can become a mendicant. And those who are not fit for that, or ready for that, then they should have some method of uplift also. Because if they're not uplifted, if their work in Varnashram doesn't lead them to become purified, then they're going to be degraded by the work. One can become uplifted by one's work, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that swakarmana tamabhyacha siddhim vindati manavaha. Every man, by performance of his duty and by worship of the Lord, can attain perfection. Now, if one's work is not purifying one, then it's very likely you're going to be entangled in it. So without Varnashram, without work which is clearly and directly meant for service to Krishna, then we're going to become degraded by our work. If we have a very strong sense of Krishna consciousness, we can work in the secular world and not become degraded by that. But practically we see many of our devotees now all over the world, they do become degraded, or at least they don't make very good spiritual advancement due to associating with materialistic people, and their work drags them down. It doesn't. Their work doesn't help to elevate them, which is why another reason why Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram. So, yada yada hi dharmasya dharma glani, when there is a decrease in dharma, it doesn't just mean chanting Hare Krishna and performing puja, but it means the Varnashram system. Dharma, the word is often used in Shastra to mean the Varnashram system. Or when in Mahabharata, again and again and again, we see the word dharma, we have to follow our dharma. But that, in most cases, that means that one has to perform one's swadharma, one's duty as a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, or stri, or woman. So Yeah, Buddhism gave no social system. It encouraged many people to become mendicants, which they're not fit for. Women mendicants also. But it went on for a long time. It went on for many years. The conditions in which Buddha appeared, he was considered an attack on Vedic culture. But he attacked what was going on in the name of Vedic culture. In other words, what was going on in the name of Vedic culture at that time was actually itself the enemy of Vedic culture, because it misrepresented it. And that I often say about Hindus are so, we've got to stop the Christians and the Muslims converting people, but the Hindus are their own worst enemies, because there's not even a semblance of any spiritual life for most Hindus. There's no systematic attempt to teach them. And Sai Baba, Sri Sri Ravi Shankar and all this nonsense is promoted more than Krishna, or even bona fide Vedic demigods like Shiva and Durga. It's just all non-Vedic, and it's all aimed at worldly gains, whereas even in Christianity they talk about you go to heaven and worship, there's a God. It's a very childish, practically, form of theism. But the Sai Baba worship is nothing spiritual whatsoever. It's just get what you want. And these Sri Sri Ravi Shankar and all these people, it's how you can adjust yourself and overcome stress and develop your personality so you can succeed in the rat race. So there's nothing there's not even a semblance of anything spiritually inspiring there. So the Vedic culture as it was being propagated at the time of Buddha, it was rotten, it was corrupt. So Buddha introduced another corruption. But it was in some ways a better corruption, because if people are just killing animals, then their whole consciousness is polluted. And Buddhism appealed to people, there are many reasons, because it promoted self-improvement. And not in a materialistic way, but one should lead a moral life. One should not be greedy for things of this world. So, at that time there were already all kinds of different groups and preachers and going around, but Buddha became very popular. One of the groups that was around the same time was the Jains became very prominent. They're not very prominent now in India, they're still there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this was found by a person called Jainism, who was a Vaishya. And although I think that's, Jains themselves don't say that, and maybe according to modern scholars, they don't say that. They have their Tirthankas and their Rishabh and Mahavir, all these. So they also. So Buddhism was very prominent for many. Jainism, they were prominent for many years. It was maybe, it was more than 2,000 years later, after Buddha appeared, that Shankaracharya appeared. So Buddhism was very... And it wasn't that when Shankara came, Buddhism just stopped all of a sudden. It was going on for many years afterward also. But it never fully it never fully dislodged the Vedic culture. It wasn't that everyone became a Buddhist. Because Shankara was preaching to followers of the Vedic culture. So it was still going on strongly. And there were different kings in different areas. Some of them were followers of the Vedic culture, some were Buddhists, and it was all a patchwork. Some were Jains. But Shankara, he strongly re-established the Vedic culture. And Buddhism gradually faded away. Which means that people who were Buddhists, they must have come back to the Vedic culture. They didn't all leave and go to China or Sri Lanka. The people in Sri Lanka, they're Sinhalese. They say that they were Buddhists before they came to Sri Lanka. So they trace their history back. They were in North India. They came to Sri Lanka. So they were Buddhists. They didn't convert to Buddhism. And Buddhism spread in Indonesia and Malaysia, all these places. Afghanistan, it was very widely spread. And all that area that was known as Greater Bharata, the Buddhism spread very widely. So the Buddhists must have converted back. The Jains, they must have. There's a case of in Tamil Nadu of one king, he converted from being what we'd now call a Hindu to a Jain, and then he got reconverted by the force, by the power of the Shiva worshippers. So there must have been reconversion, and they must have been allowed. Whereas nowadays, they don't allow. If Muslims, I mean, there are different groups, but the VHP wants to convert Muslims and Christians back to Hinduism, as they call it. But there was that case of when Kashmir, because their king was a Hindu and most of the population was Muslims. And so when they joined India rather than joining Pakistan in 1947, many Muslims there, they said, okay, can we reconvert back to Hindus? And Pandit Nehru, he asked the Shankaracharya of Varanasi, who said, no, what an idiot. This would have solved so many, there wouldn't have been so much problem. But he said, no, they're all, we can't accept them back, they're outside. And now the Shankaracharyas themselves are going around all the tribals and this and that and trying to stop them converting. They're happy to see people are getting converted back and all. Of course, Srila Prabhupada said this is all superfluous anyway, because Jiva Sarup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das. But we do see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu referred to Shankara as Acharya. So he accepts him as an Acharya. He gives him that much respect. He accepts that he did something good, even in a roundabout way. So, Shankara, he revived the Vedic culture in its actual Vedic form. He revived it, gave it new life. He reestablished the worship at Badrinath of Badri Vishal, and was able to defeat the Buddhists or in a way that others had not been able to do. Previously, there were always debates between the Buddhists and the followers of the Vedic culture, but Shankara, by proposing that Brahman, that one should attain impersonal liberation in Brahman, he hijacked the Buddhist philosophy and gave it a Vedic color. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Vedna mania bodh hoito nastik. The Buddhists are atheists because they don't accept the Vedic culture. But Veda Shrinastik Yavad Bodhake Adik, but those who, referring to Shankara and his followers, those who preach the same thing under the cover of the Vedas, they're worse. So Shankara revived the Vedic culture. At the same time, he both revived it and attacked it. He was both a proponent of and an enemy of. Of course, we understand he's not really an enemy, but he had a certain job to do. So, if we say this, definitely the followers of Shankaracharya and most Hindus, those who've heard of Shankaracharya, probably many Hindus have never even heard of him. It's just such a bad situation that of course it may have been even throughout many years, the many members of Vedic culture hadn't heard the name of Shankara, but at least those, the Brahmanas, they should have known. But there's no such culture now. The Brahmanas are all Shudras, and they study very well to become higher place Shudras. So they would be outraged if you say this, that Shankara was an enemy of Vedic culture. Of course, the Madhva Sampradaya people, they'd be very happy to hear this. It's the one defining feature of the Madhva Sampradaya is their enmity towards Shankara's philosophy. Although it may be at the present time, those who keep that up, they keep it up maybe not because they understand the philosophy in all its depth and how bad this philosophy is, but it's something like the sectarianism which defines their culture. Just like if you're a Sunni, you're not supposed to like Shia Muslims, and if you're a Shia Muslim, you don't like Sunnis. And they don't really understand why, but anyway, we're Shia, so we don't like Sunnis and all this. This debate that Zakir Nayak had with Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, he said that this is the real art of living. Islam, 1.3 billion people all over the world, and all the Muslims there cheering. I said, oh yeah, okay, well, what's this with all the Sunnis and Shias killing each other then all the time in Pakistan, in Iraq, and now in Syria also? What is this? This is your art of living or the art of killing? Anyway, that's another subject altogether. But what is actually pro-Vedic culture and what is against Vedic culture, then we have to understand that Vedic culture is not simply a matter of saying, Gar se kaho, I'm Hindu hai. Or say it with pride, I am a Hindu. It's not a matter of following all the rules and regulations, which very few people do nowadays. But one should know what actually the Vedic culture is meant for. How many Christians are there in the world? Maybe 2 billion or something like that. How many followers of Christ are there in the world? How many? Well, there's a saying in German, so I'm told, I don't know German, that the last Christian died on the cross. In other words, no one ever followed him. Well, there were quite a few who died on the cross after that. He wasn't the only one who was crucified, but so we have to understand what is the actual purpose. And that's very clear from Bhagavad Gita. Vaidaischa sarveraham eva vedyaha. So one who doesn't accept that Krishna is the goal of all this, and aham hi sarva yajnanam bhukta cha prabhureva cha natu mam vyajananti. What's the last line? Look it up. Natu mama bijananti. Yeah. Anyway, it's another of those. You know the number. Okay, let's look it up. Krishna says, Aham hi sarva yagyanam bhukta cha prabhurevacha natu mama bijananti tatme natas jevantite. I am the only enjoyer and master of sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. In other words, you can do all your yajnas. Aham hi sarva yajnanam. But if we don't, the Vedic culture culminates in yajna. So you can be doing all yajnas, up, down, left, right, here, there, and everywhere. But if we don't recognize that Krishna is the enjoyer and the master of everything, if one doesn't understand this tattva about Krishna, then chivanti, they fall down, they're chut. That we have that in modern Hindi, don't we? O kitna baje gari chutegi. What time will it go away? It means you get cut off. Achuta, Krishna, he's always situated in his position. But if we don't understand that it's all meant for Krishna, then even though we're following all the Vedic culture and we may even fight and die for the sake of Hinduism, but we're cut off from it. The essence of Vedic culture is Krishna consciousness. So again, coming to that point of those who are promoting materialism in the form of Vedic culture, they're actually enemies, because they may be fighting, we've got to stop the Christians and Muslims converting and this and that, but Muslim, Christian, Hindu, whatever, their main goal of life, the main worshipable object of everyone is, to use the biblical language, mammon. Jesus, it's the word mammon is an English word which only comes in one saying in the Bible. It's only, but it's a well-known saying, where Jesus says, you cannot love God and love mammon. So mammon means material enjoyment, the worldly life. So we see that people in India very easily convert if you say, well, you get 10,000 rupees a month for being a Christian. Okay, it's good. It's good religion. Pretty good. Because they're thinking, dharmasya pavargas, that religion is meant for worldly benefit. Mormonism has been the fastest growing religion in America it's just always growing and growing and growing. And even in the last presidential election in the United States, the Republican candidate who was defeated was a Mormon. It's a wacko religion. It's some John Smith or someone in the 19th century had the Book of Mormon revealed to him. It's just some imagination, that's all. But they're good businessmen. They're moral people. So they all work together, and they materially, if you're down and out, you become a Mormon, and your material situation will improve. It's practically guaranteed. Whoops! Don't all run away. Stay here. We're not preaching that. I'm not a Mormon preacher in disguise. I've been living in India all these years, studying, and now my real colors. I want to convert you to Mormonism. No, it's not like that. So people say, yeah, it's good, good religion. So you get live happily in this world and you can go to heaven afterwards. Sounds pretty good. So they're saying this Shirdi, all this Sai Baba, this and that. What do you get? Which lottery is the one you're more likely to win? Or which it's all conceived of in material terms. So that is allowed in Vedic culture. That's why there is Karmakanda and Gyanakanda and all this, as we just read. That Srila Prabhupada writes that the Lord appears anywhere and everywhere. In each and every incarnation, he speaks as much about religion as can be understood by the particular people under their particular circumstances. So Jesus spoke at a certain level. Buddha spoke at a certain level. So it's at a certain level, and within the Vedic culture, you can be a Karmakandi, a Gyanakandi. But it's not that these are the ultimate paths. A lot of the Vedic culture, it's like there's a wild elephant, and you're trying to bring him under control. So the elephant, if you can pull him back a little bit or get him a little bit on course, well, that's he's not fully wild. You've got him a little bit on some rope, but still he's wild. So that's some improvement. So it's like we have these wild desires, and if we have some control and we put a little bit on course, well, that's some improvement. So the Vedicas say, okay, do karmakanda, at least they're following some rules and regulations, and the yagyas are offered to Vishnu, even if you're not interested in worshipping Vishnu. So there's some progress. And the idea, you slowly, like an elephant is running wild, and you gradually bring him under control and then get him going on the right path under control. But as he may be under some control, but he may be doing better than if he's completely wild and mad, but he's still off course. Until you're on course, you're off course. There's a line which between point A and point B. Our point A is we're here in the material world. Point B is back home, back to Godhead, free of any personal desires. Anything else will not take us back to the spiritual world. So we may be doing many things good, but if we're a little bit off course, then we're not going to the spiritual world. We're off course. Unless we're completely fixed, mame kam sharanam raja, completely surrendered to Krishna, then we're off course. So that's why they're talking about attacking Vedic culture, but most of many of the attackers of Vedic culture are within Vedic culture, because they don't recognize natu mama bijanati tatme natas chivantite. They don't recognize Krishna as the actual goal of Vedic culture. That's why this idea jato mat tato pat, all the ideas as good as each other, it's an attack on Vedic culture from within. But because people think, oh yeah, that's wonderful, that's what we want Vedic culture to be, instead of thinking what Krishna, who is the goal of the Vedic culture, what he says it should be for. So the whole attitude is wrong. Vedic culture means we follow the rules as given by Krishna, dharmang tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, so that we can be purified. And if we say, well, just take it whatever way you like, then it undermines the whole basis of the Vedic culture, which is to surrender to Krishna. Even if our surrender is gradual, we should recognize that. So, again, as we should be very cautious about identifying ourselves as Hindus. Hindu is all very non-specific, but we are very specific. We want to surrender to Krishna. Okay, Hare Krishna. You had a question yesterday that was related to the class. What's that? You want to ask that now? Can't remember. All right, any other questions?
Hmm.
For common people following Varnashram is impractical. Yeah, it is impractical because the society is not set up like that. But Srila Prabhupada wanted us to make it practical. Practical means, what are our... Varnashram is a system of living in this world, fulfilling our material needs, and at the same time worshipping Krishna. So our material needs are, the basic needs are food, clothing, shelter, and for most people, sex. So, sex is there in a family. And food, clothing, and shelter can all be produced locally. So it's not that it's impractical, but because I've spoken about this, you can take a note and send some lecture about this. I've spoken many times about this, but because, just like there's that money culture lecture I gave in Coventry, sent to Coventry. Because we think that we need money and we need so many things which we don't actually need, therefore we think it's impractical to live simply and chant Hare Krishna. And because we are, most people, well, the whole society trains us to be Shudras, so we need someone to do it for us, we need someone to show the way for us, to set it up for us. So most people don't have enough boldness or faith in Krishna or any clue about how to actually do this. It can be done. It's not impractical. So the question begins with, it's not practical. But I say, it is practical. Why not practical? Why not? I'm saying that it's just a fact of life that we can live as people have lived for thousands and millions of years simply and chant Hare Krishna. Of course, Varnashram means a lot more than that, but that's the beginning, yeah.
Instead we should propagate the holy name so they gradually understand the essence of Varnashram, then they follow Varnashram gradually.
Propagate the holy, so the proposition is propagate the holy name so that people understand the essence of Varnashram, and then we can introduce Varnashram gradually. It would be a good idea if Srila Prabhupada had not told us to introduce Varnashram immediately. So it might seem to us that it's a good idea, just preach now and introduce Varnashram later. But Srila Prabhupada told us, preach now and introduce Varnashram now. So as followers of Srila Prabhupada, we have to accept his order. And if we just preach Krishna consciousness without Varnashram, and it's very difficult for people to remain in Krishna consciousness. As we see, people, anyway, I've spoken so many times, you can give some link to some of these lectures. We see that devotees have a very hard time following the basic regulative principles, or even following basic sadhana, because their life is so much taken up with earning a living, as they call it. So it's required. Varnashram is required, even to help us just to maintain a basic level of Krishna consciousness. What is now in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness considered a reasonable level of Krishna consciousness is quite below that which Srila Prabhupada, is the level of sadhana which Srila Prabhupada established. There are maybe tens of thousands of initiated devotees in the world. How many rise early in the morning, have 4:30 Mangal Arati and then full morning program? Very, very few. Why? Because they're all going to work. Is most of them, and they say, well, it's not practical. So you're saying it's not practical to have Varnashram, and I'm saying if we don't have Varnashram, then it's not practical to be Krishna conscious. It makes it possible to be Krishna conscious, just like we're all sitting here. And apart from Narayan Srinivas, who combines chanting japa with chasing the birds away from the rice fields, it's all right. You can chant japa in the rice fields also, and calling out Hare Krishna loudly so that the birds don't take all the rice, is they can also become purified by hearing that. But Maybe you're thinking this class is going on too long, but we haven't done any work yet. But that was Srila Prabhupada's idea. Live simply and have time for chanting Hare Krishna. Anyway, whoever's making this proposition, which is, it's commonly thought like that, and as this devotee is saying, and it is a fact that Srila Prabhupada, he brought in, so it was a revolutionary idea. So if the devotee wants to give their email contact, and then you can, I've given several lectures on the necessity for Varnashram, pros and cons. Savyasachi Prabhu has given many lectures on this, isn't it? Many, many lectures, mostly in Hindi. If the person who's asking understands Hindi, you can send them that CD of lectures by Savyasachi Prabhu in Hindi. In this regard. Of Siddhanta, you mean?
Yeah.
I think you said sadhana accidentally. So Siddhanta, then it's who will, yeah, so who will decide what is Siddhanta?
Then there's
endless discussion. Who will decide what is Siddhanta? Krishna decides. So therefore, the fact that anyone can say anything is, and then where do we go? Who do we follow? Or do we just follow our own mind? But as I quoted yesterday also, the well-known verse, Tarko pratishta shutayo vibhinna nasavrishya yasya matam nabhinnam dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena gatasapanta. I quoted that yesterday, didn't I? Yeah. That the path of argument, nothing can be established, as Srila Prabhupada said that. Someone will make some argument, someone will come and knock it down. You see these great philosophers of the Western world, they put up proposals and they sound very good, and then someone just comes and... famous philosophers, they'll say something and then someone else will come along and say something else. And in the Western world there's always this pendulum swinging, dichotomy between realism, pragmatism, and romanticism. So someone will say, "Oh, well, that's right. Okay, it's good philosophy, but there's no love in it. There's no romance in it. So we're not interested in all this realism. Let's get romantic." And so they talk out pratishta. People have different opinions. So there's and even they may be very expert in logic, but then someone else will come with another perspective and then undermine all of that. So Taka Pratishta Shutiyo Vibhinna. The Vedic literature gives different directions. Actually there's only one direction, but it may appear to be different. And the rishis, they all say different things. You can't be a rishi unless you have a different opinion to others. That's exactly what there's Na Sav Rishi Yasya Matam Nabhinnam. You can't be a rishi unless you have a different opinion. So, dharmasya tatvam. What is, there's the question of the yaksha to Yudhishthira. How can we understand what is actually dharma? So, nihitam guhayam. It's deeply hidden in the heart. So mahajana yena katha sapanta. So therefore one should take the path of following the mahajans. Then you have to choose your mahajan. According to our sincerity, according to our attitude, we'll get a different mahajan to follow. Otherwise the Siddhanta is very clear. Vaidesha sarveraham eva vedyaha. I am the goal of all the Vedas, Krishna says. And who is Krishna? Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhukta cha prabhureva cha. Krishna is the enjoyer and lord of all the yajnas, all the Vedic sacrifices. Natumam abhijananti tatvenasas chevantite. If you don't accept that, then you fall down. So, easy for the easy. It's simple for the simple. If you want to make it very complex, then it becomes very complex. So, Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.